Thought Press Network.
CRIT.
Fuck that shit. Hey guys, welcome.
Welcome to the new train wreck. That is Crit or Die, Bears Love Gaming. You're listening to the fucking human gun right to my left, fucking Kenny Cortina.
Hello.
And this is the voice of the human air horn. Bow, 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 bow. Motherfucking Pedro Cortez. So it's kind of funny that there's only two of us recording right now as opposed to the table that you're used to hearing. So, Kenny, why don't you let everybody know why there's only two sexy bears recording
because
at a time?
There's you only need two sexy bears. I don't know what do you need more of?
There's too much hair going in. You're going to have to sweep it up. It's going to get in the drains. It's going to get nasty. Got to get Drano in there, man. You don't want to fuck up your place by having too much bear action.
No, of course. I mean, come on now. I mean, you got vanilla and you got caramel over here. Yeah, what else do you need? Just a nice little swirl.
It's basically we're just like a fucking frosty ready for you scoop up into your lips.
Oh my God, why are we always so sexual when we talk about this on podcast?
Because we get so excited. That's actually how we express our excitement. But no, on a more serious note, now that the Talking Geek has been split up into...
Actually, the Talking Geek now is part of which is part of Thought Press, the new network now. And we're actually starting up a new podcast, a new segment, and we're actually, you know, it's Crit or Die, Bears Love Gaming. I mean, what else do you need to know?
That wasn't a random string of words. That was actually our name.
That's actually our title. Crit or Die is just the saying that is either you go big or you go home.
Yeah, you're either going to succeed or, bro, you're really going to fucking regret it. And, I mean, we're going to be covering everything from, I mean, Magic. We talked about Magic, like other different types of card games, board games, video games. Basically, just the kind of nerdy shit that Kenny and I would love to go off on very, very long tangents. But I'm pretty sure that we would terrify the rest of the people that we'd be recording with, so then we could only terrify you, our wonderful listener, instead of a room full of people.
And the thing is that this is something that me and Pedro share. We love all things geeky, but I mean, me as far as something that we can connect, one of the things is gaming. I mean,
oh yeah,
we all come and we both actually have different philosophies when it comes to gaming as well, and that's what I like about this is that, for instance, myself, I'm more of aggro, especially...
You're more impulse.
Yeah, I'm more of a person that's like, oh, the game started. I need to figure out a way to win. I need to win now. I've always been that way, especially when I started playing Magic the Gathering. And Magic the Gathering is really what showcased... That's what I've noticed, that I'm very aggro, that I need to get to the point. I usually play in that style, especially black. Oh, back then when it was mono black.
When black used to be super fucking aggressive.
Yeah, it's not only that. It's that I didn't give a shit what happened to me in particular. I don't care if half my deck is gone and I'm at 5 life. As long as you're dead,
If I won, who fucking matters?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. But, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, that's me. And I know that Pedro, in terms of gaming,
it's interesting that you bring Magic up, because I feel that like you really get a lot of a person's personality when you play Magic, because there's so many different strategies, and especially now versus when we started playing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There's so many other different ways that you can win, other ways of like putting pressure on people. I mean, now that there's actually mid-range, mid-range never really existed before, and now before it was either like you're going to be in for the fucking long haul, or you're going to take this over with real quick, and now there's actually strategies where the game doesn't last too long, but you're able to put a different type of focus on how to take out somebody, and I typically my style is definitely longer. The main deck that I play is a White Angel deck. Which is more
fucking long con.
It's more form over function, to be honest. There's a lot of ways that I could make it better. But I mean, then it wouldn't be an angel deck. It's very tribal. I mean, I've had it designed that way for fucking years, and it is very much designed to slow shit down to a grind. It's very much about only attacking with one creature at a time, and then using exalted bonuses to really stack that motherfucker up. And
you know what? Let me ask you this: now that we're in we're talking about Magic, what is your favorite deck that you can remember? And I'm just talking about of all time, sitting there and you actually playing.
Now, decks that I've played or decks that I've
seen? No, a deck that you created that you were like, wow, you know what? This is, I can always go back to saying that this, because nowadays there's such meta play.
Yeah.
That people just, oh, okay, let me just go online. Let me go ahead and find the best kind of deck. Back then in the 90s, you didn't have that.
You had a card that gave you an idea, and then you structured everything around one single card.
And the thing is that you would base your strategies off of who you played in tournaments. That's really what it came down to. Like now, since with the internet and how it went as far as technology, now you don't even need to be next to somebody to play.
Yeah, Magic Online.
You know, you play Magic Online. There's no point. Like now it's like, okay, I know that in, I know at the Pro-Am, this guy had a fucking... Esper control, that's what I'm going to go with.
Yeah, and I will mimic it almost exactly. If not, you know, turn for turn exactly. Yeah.
When Exodus came out, and that was my favorite mono black was during Exodus because I had No Brooch, I had Curse Scroll, I had Bottomless Pit,
mm-hmm.
I had Altar Bridge. Pretty much all I did was just make it where you could not do anything. And it was fun. They were focused cards that you can use, like, everybody else had the same kind of mechanic, but they used different cards that ended up doing the same effect, which essentially I thought that's how Magic was. Now, it's one of those things where I don't see that happen too much.
The colors are very stratified at this point. Like, they're very, like, there's, like, hard limits to what each color can do unless there's, like, a mechanic in a set that ultimately changes that. Like, I remember, I don't think it's an artifact, Moat. Which is just very simple. If I remember correctly, it's a white enchantment where you can't be attacked except by flying creatures, right?
Right.
And that slowly but surely started ended up becoming other colors' abilities over time. So a lot of those things that we used to see back then just ended up getting shifted over.
Yeah, it's blending now more so. I mean, obviously, we're never going to see a black counter in my life, but a pure black counter in my life.
Going back to the question that you first asked, like, probably the deck I'm the proudest of, like, even though, like, I love my White Angel deck, and I've had a variation of that White Angel deck for over 10 years at this point, the deck I'm probably the most proud of is what we love to colloquially call Fuck You Red. when it's actually all about Graveyard Recursion. Where,
red, you're talking about Red Deck wins, right?
The one where I have no creatures.
Yeah, the mono red that you have? Oh, okay, yeah.
Well, that's not Red Deck wins because, like, you know, I would have to have some goblins in there.
No, not necessarily. I know decks that are Red Deck win that's just strictly just direct damage.
Mm.
And
well, the way that this one works is that there was a card released during the first Innistrad set, which basically gave all of your burn fucking flashback. Yeah. So then I just set things up where I get bonuses whenever I cash it from my graveyard, and then, you know, I keep the board clear, and then suddenly, like, oh, I have so much mana, and oh, look at that, I have a couple of Seething Songs in my graveyard.
Well, let me ask you, but I know that your favorite color in terms of Magic as a whole, your favorite would have to be white.
White, yeah. White's the one I always keep going back to. It's very, very defensively minded.
And that's the thing. Mine is black. And I wish black was strong.
And
but
that's funny because I would say red because you play so much red.
But that's the thing. I lean towards red now. And it's because, again, it's the aggressive effect of the strategy. And I like that. That right now, currently, I'm playing red-blue Zada.
A prowess deck.
Which is...
mean as fuck.
I mean, and it. I have to splash a little bit of green only because it, you know, it helps boost. Yeah, it helps boost the character. And that's the thing, it's like...
If you had two or three more Zadas in that deck, that thing would be terrifying because you'd be able to more reliably get it.
No, and that's the thing, it's like, I know decks out there, and Zada's not even a top tier, like, it's not even a top 10 right now. And I've seen the decks that are available now, most decks that are top tier are usually control.
Right now it's green-white humans is just fucking dominating. Or either green-white or mono-white humans.
I will always love Magic, and to be honest, like, one of my guilty pleasures is actually opening a new pack and smelling the cards.
It's like he breathes in the essence of whatever he is opening up.
I don't know what it is. It's like the smell from the factory that made it. And I can go down. I used to be so bad that I could smell the pack and tell you what edition it came from.
Oh my god!
That was how bad. Like, I'm not like that anymore. At least I don't think so. Let me think.
You wouldn't be able. I mean, we haven't pulled. Well, now the real test is to fucking blind pull old packs and see what.
Oh
happens.
My god, that would be crazy.
Nah, I can't afford that. Fuck
no,
that.
No, I don't think anybody can.
Yeah, nobody we know.
Oh, but you know what? Now the new quote unquote set that's coming out.
It's already out, actually.
Oh no, I'm speaking. I'm speaking, of course, of of Masters.
Yes,
the new
modern
Masters.
Yeah, Eternal Masters already came out. They've already started the push for the new standard set. Yeah, Eternal Masters. For any lapsed players or players you don't really keep up with. I don't even know if I would even call it the meta, but to keep up with the current releases, it's a set that's made for modern, which is really interesting because Magic Wizards of the Coast has always been so focused on standard because that's their money, that's where they make their money and where they get big, and they finally started releasing sets that brought back older, more powerful cards, and the packs cost more to make up for some of the power because this last set had, I mean, they brought back fucking Force of Will.
They brought back Force of Will.
As a mythic.
They brought back Counterspell. They brought back quite a few cards.
Sensei's Divining Top. Oh my God. They brought back Necropotence. They brought back Sneak Attack. Like, big fucking cards from the past.
Which is great. I mean, again, like you said, which is cool that they actually focused on other sets, because now I've seen a rise more recently of not only Modern, but also EDH Commander decks. I've seen that, which is, it's cool to have Standard. Standard will always be the top tier. You're always wanting to see the fresh, like, as
the
far
newest
as
shit that's
yeah,
popped
the
out.
New shit yeah. that's popped out, what you can make of it. But it's also cool to see how you can blend new cards with older and run with. Like, I don't think we're ever going to see Legacy get huge either, the Legacy format.
No, Legacy always has its place, but it's mainly for... I mean, the problem with Legacy is that you just have too many, like, one-turn kills. Like, too many decks where it's just, like, one or two turns and, like, okay, fucking endgame.
Yeah.
Now, this is how current we're going, and I want to see Kenny's reaction when I tell him this. So they started revealing cards for the newest set, Eldritch Moon, which is coming out in the middle of July.
I know you like that word, Eldritch.
Eldritch. I'm very big on big, creepy fucking monsters, and yep. I mean, they're doubling down on the big, creepy in this set. So they decided, they're like, okay, well, we're going to have a new type of card. Now, you like transforming cards, right? Whatever, it's a thing. Nah. How would you like two cards that transform?
What do you mean, two cards?
So there was, back in the day, there were these joke sets, two joke sets, and they had a card as a joke. You needed to cast both card sides at the same time.
Oh my God, BFM.
Yes, so now they actually have three, and this, I think it's called Meld, three melded monsters that you have to have both parts out at the same time. And then when you get the second part out, it triggers, and it turns into one large card.
Dude, when the fuck did Magic become Yu-Gi-Oh? What the fuck is that?
Yeah, it's...
No, man. I mean, come on. Look, I get it.
It's interesting because the cards that are doing it are actively work with each other, so it's not like you have to stretch. So it's one of those things where you could logically see how those cards would work together already.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. You can cast those cards individually?
Yeah. And they work completely fine individually.
And they work completely fine doing something else.
Completely fine on their own. But if you have both out at the same time, you trigger the transformation.
See, that's the thing. It's like, that's kind of...
That's why I wanted to see your reaction, because I felt kind of the same way at first, where I'm like, bro, that's really weird.
They're really trying. Like, the thing is that Magic wants to keep fresh, wants to keep going with always coming up with new mechanics. And I get it. I mean, you don't want to be stale. You know, we used to have dual cards, like the actual half and half on the card.
Yeah, that was like, I think that might have been the actual first step of like, well, maybe we're not necessarily chained to, you know.
No, and it's funny because there's a card, and I can't remember the name, and I know you remember the name, because again, I'm horrible with names.
I have a very, sometimes I have encyclopedic knowledge about stuff.
It's so the one card that allows you to summon, summon an Eldrazi. That is not from your deck.
This is a new
or
card,
from
yeah.
your hand.
It's basically like it's more like a Living Wish, because Living Wish back in the day was any creature, but this one is more specifically.
I know that at the end of the day, we're going to go ahead and buy a box of this, and we're going to actually go through the cards or actually have a little tournament here and figure out, well, you know, how well we are, how much we suck at the new set. But all in all, I mean, Magic will always have a dear part in our hearts. And that's... And besides that, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, my aggressive philosophy is for a lot of games, but you can't focus, like, the only time that I'm not like that is during RPGs. Because in RPGs, I want to find everything. I want to be immersed in everything that is happening in the game. And that's the only time I never want to finish anything right away, which it makes me excited for the new Final Fantasy game that's coming out. It looks beautiful.
Yeah, 15, the demo came out a little while ago, and Okay, so I'm okay. I'll let you go for. I don't want to be the guy that comes in and just fucking starts being a pain in the ass about shit. But
oh no, I understand. I have an understanding of why you're going to be upset about it. Well, the thing is that when I played the game, when I played the demo, it reminded me a lot more of Kingdom Hearts,
which is actually the more positive thing I had to say right. about it.
Which I get it. Like it gives you it's no longer turn based. It doesn't give you that turn based feeling anymore. Now it's more free action. It's more of real time fighting, which I like, and I like the new features as far as the dimension shifting and going from to perform attacks and things like that. The stuff that I don't like is their use of magic, or at least the way that they're portraying magic in this is like spells and things like that. It looks like it's almost secondary, like it's a very low secondary, tertiary type of thing.
That they're focusing more on Rushdown as opposed to using magic.
Right.
I think that's also more of a demo thing than anything else, because they're giving us very, very minor access to the other thing, because that's a thing too. Like Kingdom Hearts was very aggro, but magic definitely had its place in this, and I think because this is Final Fantasy, they're going to be more aware of that.
The one thing I do want to see is how you perform summons in this game. Or if summons
are definitely going to be in this fucking
yes,
game.
Yes, and it needs to, like, we've already seen a Bahamut, and I want to see how Ifrit looks.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see if it's one of those things where you summon it and it stays in the game as you're playing, or you become...
I have a feeling that knowing how fucking Square loves to have big fucking set pieces, they're probably going to end up becoming it, and you're just going to fucking wreck shit for however long that you're, scurrying around the field.
Right. I mean, I can't wait. I honestly can't wait for that.
Yeah, so my big thing with it more is that, like, I've really fallen off with Final Fantasy. Like, Final Fantasy 13 really fucking turned me off to the whole thing. Like, I had zero, and like, I watched my ex play that whole game, and I'm just watching it, and like, I didn't like a single one of these characters. And at the very least, I'll give them credit. The shit that I've seen, like, the people in 15 are way more likable. And the idea of it being basically like a bro road trip, I'm like, okay, that's a different idea, and I can get behind that. But I don't trust Square nowadays to actually do something right, because they fucked up so many times, and they fucked up for a while with all that 13 business.
The thing is that I think they fucked up way before then. I honestly think that 8, by
wow,
far...
Wow, you're going back to 8.
By far, and I'm sorry, 8 as far as the mechanics for magic,
mm-hmm.
because how do you go from housing and just, like, from the materia... from using the materia aspect in Final Fantasy VII to now saying, oh, let's store all of our magic and never use it, only to boost my attack.
And see, that's what I like. I liked the ability to go in and, like, somebody who really likes, again, this is different play styles.
Yeah.
I love to be able to tweak settings and be able to, like, okay, well, I'm going to go here. Because here's, if you've never fucking... really dove into Final Fantasy VIII, you can break the entire first disc of that game by going and you leave your first area, and there's like a little beach side, and you go and you fight
and just stay there forever.
No, you don't even need to stay there forever. Maybe 15-20 minutes, you just pull this one element and you attach it to the main character, because in that game you draw magic out of enemies and you
store them on your weapon.
Yeah, you hold it and you're basically using them like items, but you can also use it to boost up your stats. And if you do that and then you go down like one very quick upgrade route, you break the entire first disc, because then your first character, your main character, is doing over 1,000 damage in the beginning of the fucking game, and it took maybe 15 or 20 minutes of grinding to do that. That's what I loved. I loved the ability just to go and be like, yeah, you have this idea about what you wanted me to do, and I'm going to fuck it right in the face. I'm going to this.
See, I don't know. I get it. I guess that's why you like it, and I can understand that. The storyline, to me, I didn't very much enjoy either.
I've warmed up to it over... It's still not great, but I've warmed up to it over the years. It's taken a while, though.
And it was kind of a roller coaster, because then Final Fantasy IX came out, which made me feel like Final Fantasy Tactics it was just Final Fantasy Tactics.
Final Fantasy IX is my favorite Final Fantasy.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's Tactics. That's what it is. Which, I enjoyed Tactics, and I very much enjoyed this one. And See, it blends it in because it reminds me of older Final Fantasies as well. So
yeah.
Especially the job titles and things like that.
I mean, yeah, they got super specific with keeping characters in specific classes. And I do not like Final Fantasy X.
Oh no, you and me both.
I really don't like Final Fantasy.
I didn't like
X.
Underwater soccer. I didn't like any
underwater
of that
boring
shit.
Math soccer. I don't mind math. I don't mind soccer, but math soccer can go fuck itself.
And then you put water on it, thinking it's going to be
yeah,
better.
Yeah, no, they're holding their breath for 20 minutes. Yeah, of course. For some reason, like, I can believe that you can summon a giant weird pain demon, but you can't be floating underwater for 10 minutes.
Oh, and then the main character fucking...
Jesus Christ, those characters are fucking a pain. Just super obnoxious, super whiny.
But then, and then Final Fantasy tailored off to...
12 I ended up liking a lot.
But you skipped one, which is...
I skipped 11 because I didn't go
and
online.
And 10 too, which we're not even...
Well, I'm not counting. I don't count the sequels a lot of times because the sequels are just extensions of their base title.
That's true. And Final Fantasy XI was the open world MMO.
It's an MMO,
RPG
you know. I don't play MMO, so I know, but I know a ton of people.
It
who
was
have...
okay. I mean, I'm not going to say.
Oh, you
it
played
was,
it?
It was okay.
Okay.
It was it. I unfortunately those kind of games, Japan gets them way before we do. So by the time you get on there, it's like, oh look. They're already way a fuck ahead of us.
Yeah, and not only that, but that was one that had some rocky fucking beginning. Like, yeah. I remember my friends playing that and being like, I like this, but it's good. There's some shit they need to fucking fix.
Yeah, but then they went ahead and said, oh, we'll just do the same we'll do the same format, just instead of it being, MMO, it's closed off, all computerized. So a fake MMORPG for Final Fantasy XII.
And the funny thing is that like I liked that about XII. Again, being able to the whole system for that one was that you were able to put in commands and like a list of commands. So it basically like a series of if then statements. Or like you start off attacking, but if somebody's health goes under a certain amount, use a potion. Okay, if you're attacking, but then they're weak to this, and you do a scan. Oh wait a minute, you can go and do that. And at any time you can actually interrupt the combat to go and fix all that shit. Because that's the thing with 11, that combat, the combat playing it wasn't the problem. I just don't like playing with other fucking people. I like to be in my castle.
I mean, they tried to mix in WoW. I mean, that's really what
And they
it,
basically
you know,
made Lord of the Rings with it. The story is like a
Lord
big epic
Rings,
Lord
yeah.
of the Rings. So, I mean, I was cool with that.
What other games, as far as when you started learning that, you know, when you were growing up, that you enjoyed playing?
I mean, the two that immediately jump into my head, before I ever touched a Final Fantasy, I touched Chrono Trigger and I touched Super Mario RPG. Those were the two first fucking RPGs. I vividly remember this, going to a used bookstore, and I had just started watching anime at the time. And, of course, I saw Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z. And I saw a strategy guide for Chrono Trigger, which has the same artist as Dragon Ball Z. It's Akira Toriyama. So I was just like, there's a game that this guy did? And of course, I never fucking found it anywhere. I tried to buy it. I told my parents to buy it for Christmas, but, you know, it sold out so fucking fast. And then lo and behold, my Blockbuster got it. So then that became the game that I rented every fucking weekend over like two summers. Like I just kept renting it over and over again until I beat it. And then I got lucky, and then when they were getting rid of it, I managed to buy it for $10, which anybody who's tried to buy an in box.
Oh.
Not with that, no, none of the instruction guides or anything, but in the box.
But still, you have it in the box.
For $10, and that at one point was going for like $90, $100,
$120. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, and then the other one is Super Mario RPG, and I'm a big Nintendo guy. So it's just like, oh, I'm playing Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, man.
Oh, there's a game that's kind of like that, but with Mario.
Let me ask you this. Let's go off of video games real quick. As far as tabletop, are there any games that stick out to you as far as tabletop games that you enjoyed?
In my youth, I mean, I played a lot of the same stuff that everybody else did. A lot of, you know, fucking shoots at ladders, Monopoly, Battleship, a lot of that stuff. It wasn't until maybe like 3 or 4 years ago that I actually started playing more board games. I had been interested in it for a while, but I was kind of with somebody who was like a stick in the mud and didn't want to actually, for some reason, you know, you can play games, but then actually playing like a board game or playing in like a dice game. Like, I don't know. There was no connection there.
Right.
So once I had my freedom, I really got a chance to start playing some of the cooler shit that's come out. And I think, at least the two that I've always stuck in my head are something called Mouse Guard. which I don't know if you've heard of it.
Mouse Guard, no.
It's almost like rolling a D&D campaign where you're playing these humans who've been transformed into mice, and they have to get from section to section.
Right.
And there's different classes for each mouse.
Cool.
What's even more interesting is there's actually a story that's going along with it that's narrated by John Hamm, out of all fucking people.
Wow.
So you're supposed to play that before you start each section. And then, of course, not House on Haunted Hill. That's a shitty horror movie. Something about haunting on a house on the hill. And what's interesting about that one is that you go into it and it's like, each room, like none of the rooms are actually laid out. Like you have to draw cards and put the cards to get the setups of the room.
Right.
But the thing is that as you're going through, you keep rolling die because you're trying to fight getting haunted by something. And depending on the item and the room that you get haunted on will change the second half of the game. The first half of the game is all about filling out the house. And the second half of the game is that there's something like 30 or 40 different hauntings, and each one is a different campaign. So say the one that I played the first time, so somebody had gotten like a candlestick, and the candlestick turned them into a dragon. So
actually, yes, I do. It's tickling.
Yeah,
a part of my brain.
Yeah,
it's there.
So then, for the rest of that campaign, the person who got haunted grabbed the booklet, read that page, and then we had to figure out, okay, how the fuck do we kill this thing, or what was it doing? And
oh man,
so that then sounds, it started, you know, stalking us from the room.
Man, that is bringing back childhood.
That is a lot of fucking fun.
But you know what the thing, like you, honestly, I think I got into it a little bit younger. I got into it when I was about 14, 15. And really, it was because of my older brother. He played AD&D, second edition.
Oh, wow. You were bringing an RP. Okay, I thought we were talking tabletop.
I am talking about tabletop.
Okay.
This is how I'm... God, let me leave.
Okay,
this
okay. Set up, I know you got me, you know, so fucking excited. I want to talk about my fucking AD&D.
No, but like... And he's playing, but he has his own group of friends, and he won't let me play. And I'm like, you know what, fuck it. I want to play, but I don't have the box. I mean, I don't have the books or anything like that. He won't lend it to me. I go into a shop. I don't even think, I forgot what, it wasn't a hobby shop. I just went into a store, and I saw HeroQuest.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at it, and I go, this looks like what my brother's been talking about. So I go, and I get it, and I look at it, and I go, bro, I want to play this. So I call my friends over, and I fucking fell in love with this game. I wish I still had it. I know that there's dozens of other games out there.
Like, oh, yeah.
The way that now, at least tabletop gaming, I've seen, in my eyes, there is it's been so expansive, and I've seen it.
It's blown up in the last 4 or 5 years. Like,
yeah.
Now people are more willing to go to a fucking bar and just fucking play games with people. Like, it's one of those things where, like, the internet, like, really made it so that we wouldn't communicate with each other, and then out of nowhere people like instantly it was almost within a couple months where people were like, you know what, I haven't played a board game in a while, let's play a fucking board game. And then now you have a ton of companies popping up and releasing shit,
which is great, because the thing is that what we're going to do for future episodes is actually get different games, either and not even mainstream games that people would know about. It's like either on video game console or tabletop or card game, and actually test it out and see the mindset that was made into playing that game. And we're also going to, in future episodes, have designers, actual game designers, come on. We're actually going
to
go ahead and interview.
And talk.
Let us know how their thought process was and what made them come to want to make this game. And also, and these are all local. These are all because we're Miami based. So these are all local designers, people that are just as geeky or even more geeky than we are.
I mean, we're pretty fucking geeky, but we never made something like that. So I think that gives them at least one step up on us.
We would love to get your feedback. If you want to hear, if you want us to talk about a certain topic, or if you even want us to play a game and actually review it or actually go into it in detail, please let us know. Again, this is Crit or Die. Bears love gaming. What
all
more
the,
can we say?
All the fucking time.
All day, every day. Well, fellow geeks, we did say this was the first episode, introductory episode. We did want to keep it short. However, one of our very own from the Talking Geek, Cue the Face, Cue the Mic, as everybody else knows her. She just finished playing Uncharted, and there is no way that we can't talk about it. She's so excited, and it makes me excited, so I have to fucking hear it. So here it is. Check out this review. Yeah! Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Crit or Die.
Crit or Die, motherfucker! Bruh, bruh, bruh!
Yeah! Bears love gaming. Anyway, today we actually have a special guest. You may know her if you've listened to our podcast before, especially the Talking Geek. We have the lovely... There's only one face. It's Cue the Mic.
There needs no other fucking faces. This is the only face you fucking need.
That's right. It's only my face. That's all you need. My face! My face! Hi, guys. Quills. Cue. Hello.
Hello, Cue. The reason why we bring her is because she recently completed Uncharted 4. And we actually thought that this would be a great opportunity because I know Bear has gone through it extensively.
Mm-hmm.
And
beat the shit out of it.
And we can get the aspect of somebody who's already played it for a while, it's beaten it a while ago, as opposed to somebody who's just fresh off the mind. And actually, I just wanted to go through the game in general because me, I've never played it. So I'm interested to see what your take is on this game. And you know what? I don't care about spoilers, so you can spoil it all you want.
Oh, perfect. Okay, so you've played an Uncharted before, right?
Yes, I played Uncharted 1 and 2, actually.
Okay, so like fundamentally, this is the same fucking game, basically. They added in a couple other things. Your mobility is vastly increased because they actually added in a grappling hook that you can attach to parts of the environment. And if you're feeling very saucy, you can shoot while you're in the air.
Ooh.
It's incredibly impractical, and the aiming is very fucking difficult. And there's a lot of their achievements attached to being able to shoot stuff, because God knows I can't fucking shoot anything while I'm in motion up there. It's actually really good for a lot of the sandbox areas, because they'll do a lot of stuff, and they've definitely picked this up more from what they learned from The Last of Us, where they'll put you into like a giant arena, and you got to figure out how to get out. And they've done that in other Uncharted's, but now you actually feel like you have more options because they increased how effective stealth is. Stealth was something you could do before, but it really was more of I kill somebody and then immediately get spotted, and then, you know, you're basically getting bullets raining down on you. Whereas here, if you're patient enough, which is a problem because you're not used to being patient with fucking Uncharted, you can go and systematically remove everybody in the area. Now,
okay.
Q, this is typically not how you like to play Uncharted, so how did you feel about that?
You know, it definitely taught me patience, and I think that it actually, for me in the gameplay, it was something that came on gradually. The first few levels, I felt like I can kind of just run in and shoot a bunch of people.
They do a good job of introducing at least a little bit, little
exactly,
aspects of it.
And then going, okay, wait, this I have to stealth a little bit more. Oh no, now I need to stealth a lot more.
Yeah.
Oh, now I need to stealth the whole time. And so because it was this like small increasingly and the further I got into the story, in all honesty, I think what helped is that I was already an Uncharted 4 diehard fan.
Mm-hmm.
So me having to slow down for a game that I already love the story was like, all right, fine, fuck it. For you, I will do this.
Well, because you get so wrapped up in everything. Yes. You're like, okay, I'm willing to let this all wash over me.
Yes.
While I'm trying to shoot these motherfuckers in the face.
And then it worked out perfectly. It was still a little bit frustrating because I'm less like, you know, run in and go crazy. I probably left behind a lot of journal little trinkets and stuff like that and treasures.
Yo, there's a ton. Like, I thought I found a bunch of them, and then I looked at the list, and I'm missing 40% of the ones. And, like, I got, like, 20 or 25 throughout the whole game where there are sections where you can jump off while you're doing a lot of the platforming parts, and there's like a little pot, like especially when you get to later areas. And I'm trying not to spoil this for some of the people who might get to this because it's basically Indiana Jones, so you're not really a lot of these are like legendary places that you can read about. But I really enjoyed having the surprise come in the game, and they do a really good job for revealing it. But you end up on an island, and there's a lot of like coves that you can sort of find randomly, and you'll get little story bits about pirates, and you see like not just how they lived, but really how aspects of the society that they were in fell apart. And especially when it's connected to the story, you're like, oh, you really get an idea how fucked everything was after a certain point.
And I did notice, because the thing is, I haven't played the game. However, I do, you know, on it because I live with Q, and we live in the Shire.
Yes.
I do see that she does play the game. And from what I've gathered from watching it, it reminded me a mix mash of Tomb Raider and Oh my god, I'm like, my mind is it feels like an open world 2 kind of thing. It feels very open worldish.
It's, I mean, they take aspects of open world stuff, but it's still, you're getting propelled down like basically a jipping corridor. Now, did you, either of you, play the newer Tomb Raider that came out a couple years ago? Okay, you did.
I did.
So what was so interesting about the new version of Tomb Raider is that you can completely tell that they looked at, I mean, Uncharted took a lot of Tomb Raider.
Yes.
And then they looked at Uncharted. They're like, okay, what can we learn from this? So it's this weird thing where now Uncharted is coming out after these two new Tomb Raiders that did their own thing. So it's really interesting when you see a lot of these games influence things, then they take what those games that influence them learned from and kind of incorporate it
like
back
an inception of influence. Of influence.
Inception is something that happens surprisingly often in Uncharted 4.
I actually really dig that, and I like the changes that it made. It almost made me feel sad that this was supposedly rumored the closing of a chapter after this gameplay had been so fantastic.
Okay, so now we talked about gameplay. Let's get more into what did you think of the story?
Huh. The story is a movie, and I loved it because they did such a fantastic job. And Uncharted has been known for prologues, teaching you certain things, and already getting you into the story while you're like training all the new things that they've added. But the story itself and where it takes you, and I'm also trying not to spoil things for those who are still in it. But
there will be a very specific point where we will start spoiling and we will let you know.
Yes,
so that,
definitely. Right. But I thought that the story was written perfectly. One, it's a standalone. It could stand alone its own.
You really don't need the other three games. I mean, you have context, but like, I was really impressed with like, oh, this is just like a domestic drama about somebody who used to have a crazy ass fucking life.
Yes, and I think that was a perk, and it was really more like if you've played all the other Uncharteds, then you appreciate the Easter eggs. They're more Easter egg stuff than actually like, oh, you need to know what Nate did in, you know, Uncharted 2 in order for you to understand a puzzle in Uncharted 4.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been really crazy.
That would have been a pain in the fucking ass.
That would have been a pain in the ass and all of that other stuff. But they did a good job of keeping it as one concise story, taking you on flashbacks when you needed them. And they just seamlessly put that story together. The end did not go where I thought it was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting something a lot different than what happened. But it was equally satisfying what the actual end was.
If not more satisfying.
But we'll get to that when we get to the spoilers.
Yeah.
No, and I wanted to ask you, I love video games that are able to depict the story. That even though you're trying to play because of the actual gameplay, it's good that the game actually follows along something. Because there are some games that you don't even need to watch any cutscenes.
Fucking cutscene
like God of War, for instance. I really did not need to know anything that's going on. Oh, I gotta kill this. All right, I'm gonna go kill this now.
Really?
Yeah, God of War. I mean,
First one.
No, I'm not. No, remember, I'm not a huge God of War fan. But I remember going.
What I'm saying is that the story is fine because I love Greek mythology and Roman mythology. However, if they had no storyline and you just went from beginning to end doing things, it wouldn't really change the game much.
That's one of the reasons why I really want to play the new Doom, because the new Doom that's out, the game starts off, you're in a coffin, you rip a demon's head off, you leap out and you go to a terminal, and a scientist starts opening his fucking mouth on the terminal like, my name is Dr. Yada Yada and I need you to, and then the Doom Marine punches the fucking terminal and just runs and starts shooting shit. It's just like, okay, they know exactly. They're like, okay, this is the game that doesn't need a fucking narrative.
Why would you need that? No, but like, there's some games that don't need it.
Yeah.
But games like this, especially visually, how, you know, I would love the fact that, I love the fact that they bring that up. Like, they actually have a story, something that coincides with what you're seeing and what you're doing. What I do want to ask, because you guys brought up puzzles before, is from Zero to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Super Nintendo.
The NES.
What's the level of frustration that you guys had in terms of puzzles or even parts, chapters of the game? Were there any like parts that you were like, fuck this shit, and you threw the controller and decided?
I actually didn't with Uncharted 4. There was two moments in Uncharted 3 where I was already pretty frustrated with that game.
Yeah.
This is the weird thing. I'll get back to the question. This is what I wanted Uncharted 3 to be.
Yes.
Uncharted 3 is not a bad game, but looking at this, and I'm like, oh, this should have been the fucking end. Like, as they were talking about 3 being the ending of the trilogy, this really does feel like almost like a mea culpa about, like, okay, well, this didn't quite finish.
They made it up. Like, yeah. No, they definitely made up for it. This is to make up for it.
Yeah. Uncharted 3 is really weird because it feels like two different ideas kind of mashed together at some point. Like, it's just really odd. Uncharted is known for jumping world to world, but this really feels like two ideas got crammed together at one time.
Right.
But yeah, going back to the puzzles, like, they did a good job with the puzzles where they were like, oh, okay, you have to think about it, but for me, I didn't have to think about it too much. It did the good job of making me feel clever without actually having to bust my balls for, you know, an extended period of time.
What about you, Q?
There was one puzzle that pissed me off, and it was just because...
The notebook one? We had to turn
it... No, that one didn't bother me.
Okay.
Real quick. They might be giving out spoilers now, so I'm just going to say spoilers.
Yeah, okay. Well, okay. Oh, yeah. From here on out, we got spoilers. You've been warned. Spoilers.
Spoilers!
Added in an alarm. Bow, 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 bow. All right.
So... Okay, so the one that really got me, and it was really only because I fucked up in trying to get to it too fast was when you have to line up the crosses so that the bucket of water lands up at the top and it opens up one of the doors, right?
Such a pain in the dick.
That one was a pain in the dick, and I got so ahead of myself that then I couldn't get it back to where it was. So it was one of those that I had to stop after like 30 minutes, and I was like, okay, I'm going to shut down the game so this whole thing, like, and I'll come back to it and reset it because I fucked this up way too much.
Because it wasn't hard, but it was one of those things where it's a positional puzzle.
Yeah.
So if you unshift it at a certain point, then you're just like, oh, God, I have to move everything around. So that it wasn't difficult, but that's definitely one where if you made that...
It's painstaking.
Yes, it's very picky.
Where I was more frustrated were in not puzzles, were in... Again, goes back to your question with me, was in having to change my game style.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, I found where some levels where I was being bombarded by... like guys shooting at me, that I would try to go in there very Call of Duty style and then like very Leroy Jenkins, and then I'd be like, no, Leroy, run away.
Oh, God, damn.
Yes. So then it really turned into one of those things where I was just like, no, Q, you're going to go in slowly. You're going to hide behind a rock.
So here's the secret.
No, wait, real quick. So instead of it being Leroy Jenkins, she had to do Metal Gear Solid.
Yes.
Just wait.
But here's the thing. They don't really give you enough tools to be sneaky enough. But I ended up just kind of gaming the system. Weird to say gaming the system when you're talking about an actual game. I actually ended up using my grenades not to kill shit, but to distract them. When some of the areas get large enough where you have to move around, what I would do is I would look at the patterns. I'm like, okay, there's enough people on this plane, because there's multiple levels, where if I can move them in that corner and position myself. So if I'm, okay, imagine a square and I'm in the lower back corner and I need to get to the upper left corner, but everybody's in my way. I would throw a grenade on the opposite side to pull them all that way. Once I would get in the opposite corner,
right.
Then I'd be able to systematically remove everybody. But that required, but the thing is, I don't think that's how they designed it. That's just how I fucking executed it.
As a matter of fact, because I didn't do that. I did like sleeper cell, kind of like straight up. I would go, okay, I'm going to crawl. I would at sometimes hang from the rocks and move along little by little and just bring one down, and then jump up and then do it again and then jump up and do it again until I had enough people standing at certain distances apart that then I could just shoot them.
Especially if you kept that's actually where keeping sniper... I consistently kept sniper rifles. I barely used any of the automatic weapons. I kept the sniper rifles because but the thing is, I would get rid of everything close to me, and it's like, oh, you're far enough away.
And just pick people off.
Oh, and then it just pop up and just pop, and it's like, oh, there he is. Oh, no, and then you're dead.
See, that is not satisfying enough for me, so I always picked up the automatic weapons. I was always going for, I just want to rain bullets on all of you.
My favorite thing was getting the sniper rifle and the fucking giant eagle.
Oh,
like
my God.
Like the 40, or like it's like a 50 caliber thing that like everything dies in one fucking hit. So I would have only 12 rounds, but if I was smart, that's 12 dead bodies that I was able to fucking unleash.
You see, that's another thing that I really love about the game. The opportunity to choose your way of gameplay when it comes to shooting. Because there was, especially towards the end of the game, there was moments where you're fighting a lot of them, and you literally had the option of choosing between like 7 or 8 different weapons. And as a matter of fact, that actually turned out, I really turned into a total... That was the moment where I was like, my COD training has finally done something
for
me.
It pays off.
Because there was one part where you're going into a ship, and you're starting to get into a ship that is sunk, right? That's there when you finally beat, you're trying to get to Sam.
Yeah.
Before you've gotten to Sam, towards the end, you're trying to get into this boat, and there's three of these guys in those SWAT gears with RPGs and a whole bunch of
chain gun.
It looks like a chain gun, right? And so what I would do is I would run out of bullets, trying to draw him out, be able to run out of the boat and pick up a whole new round of guns and bullets, go back in, blah, 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 go run outside and pick a brand new round. Like, so it was allowing me to play really crazy. At one point, I was just having him chase me. I would have him chase me, put him in a corner, throw a grenade. Have him chase me, put him in a corner, throw a grenade.
Yes.
I was like, you know what? This is actually going to also help me now in Call of Duty, because I'm going to be able to do smarter things like this. So it was actually really good. I have to say, I know that we are getting into spoilers, but the game was beautiful. I just really want to stress that.
Like, there are a lot of people that talk about, like, oh, you know, are these consoles already underpowered? Because everybody talks about how PC gaming, like, this is going to be the future, and, you know, now that everything is cheaper, yada, yada, yada. And then you take a look at this game, you're like, you know, yeah. I think they're fucking full of shit, because this really is one of the most beautiful games I've ever fucking played.
It is, for me, the most beautiful game that I've ever played. I have wanted to snapshot every scenery that I would land in. They did such a fantastic job.
The two islands that you land in, yes, near the middle of the game, like, I took at least 15 shots just because
it... Oh, no, it looks beautiful. It reminded me so much of Assassin's Creed, especially when they did Black Flag, when they were out in the water.
Oh, yes.
It reminded me a lot of that.
But I was actually going to say, because you had mentioned how it looked very open world, and I think that it's because of how beautiful and how much of the world they gave you when you were out looking.
How much you can see it.
How much you can see it, that it made you really feel like this was an open world of a gameplay. I made sure that in the part where you were going with the Jeep, I even looked it up. Where is the highest point that I can get in? And I took a, like, panoramic picture. Mm-hmm. I was like, one here, and one here, and one here, and one here. It was really, honestly, a beautiful, beautiful game, and they did such a good job that there was often times that I didn't know if I was controlling Nate or if I wasn't controlling Nate.
Yeah.
That there was moments where it was just, like, seamless, and I didn't know. I was like, oh, he's not moving. No, okay, no, that's me.
Oh, shit, okay.
Yeah, hey, I got to do things now. So that was fantastic. Mm. Fantastic. So we're getting into spoilers. Fucking Sully.
Yeah.
Yo.
Okay, so I think you and I both talked about that we thought this was going to be... So, again, spoilers here. Nobody fucking dies, which is the biggest surprise. That, okay,
yes.
So everybody expected, sort of the cheap way for everybody to get emotionally attached to something is kill somebody. That's how you get, like, oh, this is the end. And we're talking about consequence and about how Nate, you know, this is going to be Nate's last adventure. So it's like, okay, it's a little bit too obvious to think that Nate's going to die in this one, because it's like, all right, come on. You know, so we're like, okay, no, he has to suffer. So who's going to be the one to suffer? Well, they're not going to kill Elena off, because that would piss off a lot of fucking people. So it's like, okay, we've been threatening to kill Sully for 3 fucking games already.
Yeah, let's just
Sully
do it.
Sully's had a death sentence since Uncharted 1.
Yes.
And he's managed to survive, so we thought he's going to get it.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, because the first two, you already thought that he was going to die in the first one.
And the third, and each one, there's like a moment where, like, oh, god damn it, they killed Sully. And he's like, no, I'm old and tough as fuck. And they didn't kill anybody, which is extra impressive, because you really feel for these fucking characters.
Well,
and you feel stronger connected because they fucking survived.
And we didn't mention this, but there is an introduction to a new character that we get in this, which I thought was going to be the scapegoat, which is his... You come to find out that Nate has a brother, an older brother.
That's never been mentioned.
That's never, ever been mentioned, but they also really introduced him
Perfectly, very well done.
So that you even cared about this character, even though you hadn't known him in this entire series up until this very moment. And so I thought, all right, so they're going to introduce Sam, and that's going to kill Nate even more, because he just found his brother, who he thought was already dead, and now he's going to die again. And that's going to be, like, this big emotional thing. And then he didn't die either. So it was just like...
It doesn't feel cheap. It feels... Everything here feels earned.
Yes.
Well, I did see the end. And someone does die. Not him. Just not anybody that you cared for.
No. Yes. Yeah. You definitely don't care about Ray.
None of the main heroes dies. The one guy...
Yeah, let's...
I mean, it's the villain.
Amanda,
The villain dies, but he dies in a very appropriate way.
Yeah, none of the protagonists die.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way.
And again, Sully comes in at the end, and he's a badass, and he saves the day.
He's like, I don't know how I've survived this long. I'm getting the fuck out of here.
Yeah, and it was honestly a beautiful ending.
Let's talk about the epilogue. So you finish the game.
Yes.
You get to the... At that point, you see how Nate is done. He's done with doing all this crazy fucking bullshit. His brother ends up going with Sully, which I think it's interesting because that is the one thing that they could use for DLC, where it's like, these motherfuckers are still having adventures. Nate's just chilling at home because he's done, he's had enough of this shit. And then you jump about, what, 13, no, about 15 years later. Because
Yeah, I think it's roughly about 15.
I was, because by the time they do that, so about 15
they had like
years
one
later.
Or 2 years and then...
Yeah, I had actually, I had, come early, if you will, because I thought I messaged you and I was like, I finished the game. And then I, all of a sudden, it like goes into this beautiful fade out. And then all of a sudden, and I was like, oh, wait, no, I didn't finish this game. And I got to the epilogue, which was perfect. Like, I knew it the minute. Well, first, you start by playing Crash Bandicoot again.
Which that was a big surprise, where in one of the earlier chapters where you're establishing where Nate is in his life, you actually replay a level of Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah, and that was fantastic. It was Inception of PlayStation. It was absolutely amazing. And then I even liked that they incorporated that. Sorry, I'm going back real quick, but I even liked that they incorporated that in a certain section with Nate where you're running away from a freaking tank as in it's very much like Crash Bandicoot.
It's a Crash Bandicoot level,
it's a Crash
but with
Bandicoot
a tank and Nate.
Yes, with a tank and, with a tank and Nate, and you're literally running around and it's the same visual, and I was just like, wow, they really wanted to throw it back, and it was like a kudos and it was awesome. But so the minute that you finish that level, you see a girl, and I was like, oh,
well,
okay.
I mean, the girl looks just like they model her to look just like a combination of Nate and Elena.
Yes, and they did a fantastic job with that as well.
Yeah,
and I actually where you say that they can that a DLC can come out with Sully and Sam, I think that this could actually potentially the way that they ended it with Cassie, I believe is what her
name
is. Yeah. Cassie is at the end name, which is the daughter of Nate and Elena. She could now become the next Nate Drake, especially the way that they end it, where she finds what her parents used to do before, and she's going through the house.
See, I think that is. I think they don't touch that. I don't want them to. I think that is such a great visual to leave on, because the whole thing is that like it's very much sort of like the house. There's a level where you don't. There's no action. You're just fucking around in Nate's house.
Yeah.
And this one, you're fucking around with their house, but playing as Cassie. So you're going through and you're seeing what they've done all those years, all their accomplishments, and then Cassie, being mischievous like her fucking parents, breaks into their memory chest and sees the culmination of all their fucking adventures. So the series ends with Nate with their daughter talking about the first game.
Yes.
And while Elena is looking. And I think that is such a beautiful way to close everything out that I would not want that touched at all.
You see, and I have a difference of an opinion. While it's beautiful for us as Uncharted hardcore original fans that we had Nate Drake in this awesome thing, I could see where if they wanted to, 5 years from now, not call it Uncharted, but it be Cassie who's going on her first adventure.
They would definitely call it Uncharted. Like,
they would have to, but I would see that as like a perk, only because it's another. They could have given them a son. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to have and especially and I say that because in one of the parts, one of the things that she does is she picks up a magazine, and she's on the cover of the magazine.
Yes.
And it says like something along the lines of like that it
like
runs
a legacy,
in the family.
A legacy continues.
Yeah, or like that it runs in the family, like treasure hunting runs in the family or something like that. And I almost felt that was like, if I feel that people are interested in this, I've already set that she's interested in this,
they
and that she's
that
finding it.
They can put that series down for 10 years. I'm going a little more with you now. You could put this down for 5 or 10 years, and then you could be like, we haven't had an Uncharted in a while.
Actually, that would work a lot, especially since you could do. I could see that giving letting this sit because the way that this game looks, the way that the gameplay, it looks like this is a very replayable game. Like the replay value on this is still high enough that it'll allow people to go and play this over
and
over.
And it's a strong enough story.
And it's a strong enough story.
The ones that
so I would imagine they could wait another 5 before doing something else with it.
And then I think that it would be awesome to have a girl. Again, it's really, we've only had that when it comes to gameplay in Tomb Raider, where you have this adventurous girl and she's running and she's doing all of that. And that's kind of already a remake of a remake of a remake. I think that it would be a really interesting way of bringing in a adventure video game with a female as your main protagonist and following her adventures and her being just as tough and as awesome as Nate And then it's got nostalgia written all over it. And I can see myself, you know,
and you
40.
You haven't reached. There are a couple sections in The Last of Us that have that you play that and you're not playing as Joel. You play as Ellie.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to spoil what happens. One of the gameplay DLC, because the DLC that had a bunch of multiplayer stuff, but the actual important DLC occurs. Because that game is separated into seasons. In each season is sort of like a new, basically like a full new area.
Right.
So when you do play it, when it goes from fall to winter, stop playing the main game, quit out and play the DLC because that's actually set in between that period. But there's a lot of storytelling bits from The Last of Us that you can tell has fundamentally changed how they do games for the better. Like, they're way better at telling stories and incorporating way more people in it. So the lessons that they learned in The Last of Us that they put into Uncharted 4, if they keep on that same path, then I would actually be completely down for that.
I think that would be a good thing. But overall, for me,
yeah,
game was awesome.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask. What is your overall take on this? Give it a, you know, give me a grade as far as gameplay, storyline, feature-wise for a PS4 game.
Mm-hmm.
What would you give me as far as a grade for it? Let's go A to F type of thing.
Oh, man, this is an A. Like, obviously, I mean, it's not for everybody, but if you have a PS4, like, this is a game worth fucking playing. Like, this is absolutely 100%. If you have the system, buy this fucking game.
Yeah, and this for me, I mean, this is like an A+ for me. Like, across the board, yeah. Just as a fan from the beginning, just in its beauty, in its gameplay, in its ease. It's a short game when if you really, I mean, it took
like
me 12, a while.
15 hours. It's
yeah,
not that long.
It's really not that long of a game, and I think that I like its exclusivity mm-hmm. with just PS4. One, just because it makes me, I don't know, feel like I have, like, the best system
you
in the world.
Your system,
yeah, like, I earned my system. Like, if anything, it was this game that made me love the fact that I have a PS4 and not hate Sony like I did 2 weeks ago. But I think that across the board, it was just, honestly, a perfect game. There really isn't anything that I can go, well, you know, they could have done this. That I haven't played the multiplayer. That's not it. Like, I probably won't, just because
that's not what you bought.
That's not
for.
What I bought the game for. But it's even the kind of game that I would say, hey, I'm not trading this in for another game.
Yeah.
And I trade in a lot, because once I play a game, that's it. Except for Call of Duties, because I always play multiplayer. That's the kind of stuff I keep. This is a game that I'll be like, I'm keeping this one.
Yeah.
And I actually wanted to keep all the other ones. I have to go back. Well, this actually also made me want to go back and replay all the other three games.
Well, I mean, there's the Uncharted. I can lend you the Uncharted collection.
I have it
on PS4.
Because once I traded my PS3 for PS4, yeah. I had to trade in all my Uncharted. And again, those are the kinds of games that I was like, no, I'm always going to keep you, because I like adventure. And I like Nate. I have his Funko and everything. Like, if I could meet the guy, if ever at a con.
You meet Nolan North?
Yes. I will lose my shit.
Yeah.
Because if he looked like Nate, I would want him to play.
He doesn't really look like Nate, unfortunately.
No,
but
he really doesn't. Yeah. He really doesn't. And I think that they can make the movie.
Yeah.
If you're going to make a movie, make the movie on just
no,
number
I don't,
four.
After this, I don't want a movie, because I really feel like, in terms of story, they've finally hit with Uncharted 4 the feel of a fucking movie more than anything else. Like, the other ones got really close. This one, I was like, oh no, this is an actual movie that I can feel.
I
what
just want to relive it.
Yeah, but do
I
you
want
think
to
that
relive
if
it in a theater?
Well, then what you do is you go and get the cheats, so then you always have guns, and then you just burn through the fucking game.
Yeah,
the story.
But that's the thing. It's like, you think that a movie would cheapen the actual game franchise?
I don't know. I mean,
it would depend on the actor who plays Nate.
The actor who would play it would need to be, one, a charm factory. So, and then two, it would have to be written fine. Because a lot of people talk about the weird sort of balance in Uncharted, where you have a guy that's really charming murdering dozens and dozens and dozens of fucking people, and then making quick quips afterward. Now,
Jeremy Rayner?
No. I mean, if anybody, Chris Pratt. This is one of those ones
a
where
Chris Pratt?
If Chris Pratt weren't so overexposed.
Oh,
all
my
the stuff
God.
That he's
what about the dude from Firefly?
He would, if he were younger, yeah.
Yeah.
The problem is he's a little bit too, like,
oh my
I would
God.
Actually like him to be Sully.
Wait a second. If Chris Pratt played Nate Drake,
yeah.
I would, I don't know what I would do with myself. So, but then I would officially really always be Chris Pratt. I am just Chris Pratt's other counterparts.
So that's sort of the problem with Chris Pratt, is that he is just so affable and charming. Like, anytime you need a guy that can get away with them, like, I haven't seen Jurassic World, probably not going to, but everything I've been told is that, like, if there were any other actor put in that role, they were like, fuck this guy. But because it's Chris Pratt and he has just the right level of charm. Like, that's the thing. You need a charming guy to do that.
Let's not talk about Jurassic World, okay? Because they missed a great line that they could have used. Mm-hmm. You're my girl, Blue! But no, they didn't.
I think there might be copyright problems if they did that.
There's other things, but whatever. But all in all, as far as for Uncharted, it sounds like an amazing game. And visually, it looks great. And from what you guys told me, like, there's no reason why I shouldn't play this game or anybody should not. Like,
and you don't need to play Uncharted 3. Skip Uncharted 3 and just
like,
go
this
right
sounds,
to 4.
Like you said, this sounds like a standalone that you could do. And it's beneficial if you play the other games. But still, you could still play this without any confusion, any quibs. So, you know, that's awesome. I can't wait to actually get my hands on this game.
Play the game, guys. Just play.
Do it.
The game.
Awesome.
Do it now.
And thank you, Q, for being on this
Thank
podcast.
You for joining
thank
us.
Thank you, boys.
Thank you. No, I love your face. It's the only face we need.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you, guys.
Another face.
That's fine. Bears love gaming.
All the time.